This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Welcome to the Sword and Laser, episode number 128. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I am Tom Merritt.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all the cool stuff happening in the world of science fiction and fantasy, discuss the things that you guys are talking about over in the forums, and of course, talk about the book of the month that we are currently reading, which is Wool by Hugh Howey.
Loved it.
Oh, you're done too?
Yeah, I raced through it.
Me too.
Wow. We won't spoil it for anybody, but we will check in, kind of take the temperature, mm-hmm. talk non-spoilery about it later on in the show.
Absolutely. But first, let's kick everything off with the what are we drinking segment. And we are back off the wagon.
Yes. We are no longer riding on the wagon.
No, the wagon hit a big bump and it just booted me right off the behind. And I'm sitting on a wagon. Dirt road somewhere drinking happily. Get that picture. Get that image in your mind.
I am having a fat weasel ale.
Ooh, what's that?
I got it at Trader Joe's. It appears to be brewed by the River Trent Brewing Company of Ukiah, California. And it's not an IPA. Kind of tired of IPAs, frankly, these days. That's what everybody's into. It's just a good old-fashioned ale. Very crisp, very light, very tasty.
Well, it is summertime, so I'm always interested in Hefeweizens.
Yes. I like a good Hefeweizen on a hot day.
On a hot day with a nice slice of orange
mm-hmm.
in there. Pyramid is my favorite. But anyway, that's not what I'm drinking. I'm having a Cathedral Ridge Syrah from 2009, and it is quite good. I've been enjoying it for the past 3 nights now because I only drink one glass a night.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. You know, moderation. Enjoy the wine.
In all things. I'm off the wagon, but not. I didn't break my butt in the fall.
You didn't like destroy the wagon.
I didn't destroy the wagon. I didn't blow up the wagon.
Yeah.
No.
Wagon's still there. It's fine. Don't worry about the wagon.
It's chugging along somewhere without me.
Wagon is not burning.
All right, but let's move on to the actual start of the show, which is known as the Quick Burns.
I'm setting you up there with the burning thing. See?
Oh, I missed that.
Hey, Neil Gaiman is publishing a new Neverwhere story. I didn't realize this backstory until I read it on the Word Zone. But back in 96, when Neil penned the miniseries Neverwhere, that means he wrote it. Fancy words. And then adopted it into a novel a year later. People pointed out that there was a continuity error with the Marquis de Carrabas because he had a coat.
Marquis de Carrabas. Didn't you ever watch Puss in Boots? Didn't you ever watch the movie Puss in Boots?
I never watched Neverwhere either. Le Marquis de Carrabas recovered his coat after it apparently vanished forever. The point being, how did he get his coat back? Well, Gaiman promised back then to explain it all in a short story called How the Marquis Got His Coat Back, but he never got around to it until now. And you know who you can thank? George R.R. Martin is who you can thank.
I'm confused. Why is that?
Because he is editing a new anthology entitled Rogues, along with Gardner DeZoy. And that has given Neil Gaiman the impetus to write the story about how the Marquis got his coat back. And it will be in that anthology.
That's awesome. But I feel like it's kind of burying the lead because there are so many great authors also contributing to this anthology.
Well, yeah. I mean, not to diminish the amazing lineup in this anthology, which will come sometime in 2014. But I think people have really been waiting for that story who are into Neverwhere. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people, but I respect those of you who are very excited. But you're right. Daniel Abraham, The Meaning of Love, Paul Cornell, A Better Way to Die, Steve Saylor.
Joe Abercrombie.
Patrick Rothfuss, The Lightning
Scott Lynch.
Tree. Connie Willis.
I know, there's a lot of great people.
Well, freaking Scott Lynch.
I know.
You're an old Theradane.
Freaking Sherry Joe Abercrombie.
Priest is in here too. I didn't realize the first time
You should have read the article, Tom.
What?
You should have read the article.
I read the article. I just scanned the full story list because the article.
Daniel Abraham. You love Daniel Abraham. Paul Cornell, friend of the show.
To me, because I said both of those already.
Oh, you did? Oh.
Yeah.
I should have stopped reading the article and listened to you talk.
I don't read the articles before the show.
I think Joe Abercrombie is toying with me on Twitter.
Really?
I don't know why. I just have this sense that he's toying with me.
Why do you say that? Because he actually at replies you or something?
Because he replies to me, but...
Like, he must be toying with me. Why would he reply?
Exactly. I have the sense that somehow he's toying with me.
He's just being nice. He's a good guy. Neil Gaiman at replied me once.
Really?
Cool. I complimented him on The Doctor's Wife, the episode of Doctor Who that he wrote. I mean, all he said was thank you. Come on. It wasn't like...
I'm totally jealous now.
You are so competitive.
I'm not competitive.
With Joe Abercrombie, and you're jealous of me because Neil Gaiman said, Thanks.
In his like nice accent voice. Yeah. All right. So the thing that I'm confused about, and I have never seen Neverwhere, is there a Puss in Boots tie-in?
I apologize. I should go and make up this great deficit in my character. And I only half kidding
okay,
when I say
so
that.
I
don't know anything about Neverwhere.
So in the story of Puss in Boots, at least in the 1988 movie version of Puss in Boots, starring Christopher Walken as Puss, so he has to pull off this caper where he pretends to be someone because he's a cat that turns into a person. Spoiler alert. That is the whole
wow,
basis of the story.
Wow. Great.
But in the movie, he's known as the Marquis of Carabas. And so I'm wondering, is there actually a place called Carabas? And is there a Marquis? And is he somehow some kind of fictional... I don't know. Is there some reason why everyone is the Marquis of Carabas?
The character was inspired by Puss in Boots. If only we had the internet to look this up. Wikipedia says the character was inspired by Puss in Boots. Stated this as the starting point for the character and imagining who would own a cat like this.
Then there you go. Okay.
Well, you know how he does, like in American Gods, right? He just pulls in mythological figures into these storylines. It's his thing.
You're looking at a happy cat. Da, 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 da.
All right, well, you go down
memory
lane.
A dream that just came true.
I want to make the R. Scott Baker fans happy.
Oh, I want to talk more about Christopher Walken singing and pretending to be a human when he's
actually
a cat.
Don't let me stop you.
No, it's okay. It's for another day, Tom.
I'll just let people know that R. Scott Baker has confirmed that he has almost completed The Unholy Consult, the concluding volume of the Aspect Emperor trilogy, and the sixth book overall in the Second Apocalypse series.
That's great.
Working on the last two chapters of the first draft right now.
Excellent. There are lots of Baker fans out there in our audience, I'm sure, that are looking forward to reading that next version.
That's the good news. Here's
the bad news. The sad, sad news is that World of Ice and Fire is delayed. It was almost done. It was supposed to come out this year. Now, this is the big compendium, all the information that you could possibly ever want. It's like a companion novel, companion volume for all the novels in the Song of Ice and Fire world. And it's becoming even more ambitious. They're adding more art to it. They're adding more stories. And so they decided to delay it for a year. But it was so close. But now there's going to be even more cool stuff. So I guess I can't be too mad at it.
No, I get it. I'm a little mad that they're not going to put it out in the spring of 2014. They're going to put it out in the fall of 2014 because that's the holiday buying season. So it's October 28th. So we could potentially like logistically get it, say, in March maybe. Mm-hmm. But they're like, no, we're not going to put this out in March. You're crazy. We're going to put it out in the holiday buying season. So we'll have to wait more than a year now.
I got my mom a big collector's edition companion to the Game of Thrones series for Mother's Day, and she was very excited.
Hey, it's award season, Veronica.
Woohoo!
Do you have your science fiction tuxedo or dress
yes.
made by elves?
Perhaps.
You're going to the Nebulas, right?
I am going to the Nebulas. I'm not going to be there for the actual ceremony because it's the same night as Maker Faire, Bay Area Maker Faire, and I'm doing a main stage panel. So I wasn't able to go to that, but I will be there on Friday doing interviews. But we'll talk more about that later in the show. But the 2013 Campbell and Sturgeon Awards have been announced, the finalists. And there's a lot of great authors. Ian M. Banks, of course, David Brin. G. Willow Wilson for Ailiff the Unseen has also been announced as a finalist. And of course, one of your favorites, 2312 by Kim Stanley Robinson.
Yeah, I really like the Campbell Award nominees. Of course, this is for best science fiction novel of 2012. Mm-hmm. And I could see, well, and I'd want to read The Fractal Prince. I read Blue Remembered Earth by Alistair Reynolds. I loved it. Of the ones I've actually read in here, I'm not sure which one I'd pick. Existence by David Brin was great, too. And I'm definitely want to read Railsea by China Mieville.
I'm actually embarrassed to say I haven't read any of the nominees.
I thought you had read Railsea.
I didn't. I didn't read Railsea. I've read a lot of China Mieville, but not Railsea. That was on my list of things to get to. And of course, Fractal Prince as well. And you talked so much about Blue Remembered Earth. I wanted to check that out. So I've got some catching up to do.
Not enough time in the freaking universe for all this stuff.
We need to figure out some kind of sci-fi solution to that.
Sturgeon Award honors the best short science fiction stories, and some new names, at least to me, in there, but some familiar names as well. Ken Liu, Nancy Kress, Robert Reed, Bruce Sterling, E. Catherine Tobler are in there. So check it out. SFSignal.com has all those nominees, but we also have finalists for the Locus Awards announced as well.
And a lot of the same faces. Lois McMaster-Bujold is one of the nominees for the 2013 Locus Awards, who I'll be interviewing at BayCon. Not this weekend, but the weekend after that. John Scalzi for Red Shirts, James S.A. Corey for Caliban's War, for science fiction, of course, for fantasy. We've got some great stuff. Charles Strauss, The Apocalypse Codex, The Killing Moon by N.K. Jemisin, who we love, and Drowned Cities by Paolo Bacigalupi for young adult book, which I didn't realize that was a YA book.
Yeah, it's a sequel. Right, but I guess it's YA. So is Pirate Cinema, Cory Doctorow.
And apparently so is Railsea.
Railsea?
Which the idea of a China Mieville book being a young adult book is kind of crazy to me because some of the stuff in his books is pretty intense.
Again, I don't know what I would do for sci-fi Caliban's War.
I know, you love.
Up against 2312 and Red Shirts?
Red Shirts is
how
just
do you pick?
The best.
And I'm not trying to diss Banks and Bujold. I just haven't read those two particular titles. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're amazing too, or they wouldn't be nominated. But
Richard makes me super happy.
Yeah.
So I can't help myself.
He's in the same city as me right now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He's kicking off the human division.
Oh, nice.
I should go down to this bookstore that's really far away and there's lots of traffic and I suck. But I'm
you're not doing it. Is it tonight?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, well, you're doing the podcast. So
right. That's your Sorry, excuse. John.
The trailer for Ender's Game, the first full trailer. We've seen some teaser trailers in the past, but now we have a full trailer, and it looks pretty good.
Spoiler
in my voice.
Spoiler City, though, right?
No.
I mean, this movie is going to spoil the book. From the moment you start watching, apparently, because it does in the trailer.
You're right. It does. And I saw some of those comments on YouTube. I think you just have to kind of go into that knowing the spoiler, maybe. Or maybe you wouldn't even think of it as a spoiler if you haven't read the book.
I thought Harrison Ford, not, I don't know. I'm not surprised, like, I thought Harrison Ford would suck. But I sort of knew he was in this, but didn't realize how important his character was, I guess. But I was like,
about?
Oh, wow, Harrison's like on fire in here. He's kicking ass.
Why would you not think his?
I don't know.
Read Ender's Game.
No, I know. I mean, I should have known. I just didn't put it together until I saw the trailer. I'm like, oh, right. He's going to be all over this movie.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool.
He has so many cameos lately that I think that was what was in my head.
And Sir Ben Kingsley is going to be awesome.
As the Mandarin in Ender's Game.
Yeah. And playing the Mandarin in Ender's Game. Reprising his role as the Mandarin.
Who will learn a lesson, Ender?
Can we talk about Iron Man for a second?
Sure, why not?
I really love the cadence of his voice in that movie, and I'm kind of sad on the twist.
Yeah, because that means no more Mandarin.
Well, I guess it just means...
That wasn't real.
It was just used up. Like, it almost felt like watching the trailers for that movie that it was almost going to be a Joker-level bad guy in terms of the scariness or, like, the, oh, crap, like, this guy is serious business.
Yeah. And well, and they definitely built it up that way.
I know, which was the whole point, but I don't want to get spoilery for that because it's only been out for a little while.
Before we accidentally spoil Ender's Game for those who haven't read the book, let's move on to just a note. Remember, we've mentioned that Tor Books cut DRM last year so that you can buy a Tor book and read it on whatever e-reading device you would like. And they put out an announcement, I guess it was May 4th, saying, yeah, okay, we've done this for a year. We looked at sales, and we pretty much haven't seen any negative effects of this.
I love this. I love this. Like, yeah, we did this, and nothing really happened. People are just kind of happy about it. No big deal.
They said that, essentially, the people who would buy books anyway kept buying books. They didn't stop suddenly. And the pirates who were pirating copies of Tor books before kept pirating, but that didn't really change anything.
Yeah, I think the only group that complained really was Hachette UK, who kind of encouraged some of their authors, I believe they're a subsidiary, encouraged their authors to kind of go against that plan, but it didn't work.
The criticism was, how will your books stay regionally specific if they're not DRM'd? In other words, because Hachette probably has some of the authors that Tor US has, but maybe Tor UK doesn't have the rights to. And Hachette UK was like, well, we don't want people going and buying the ebooks at Tor US, and then they won't buy them from Hachette UK.
I guess that makes sense. But, you know, the problem with this, as the only commenter on this article actually says, is that, frankly, there's not going to be much of an impact because ebooks are just not that expensive. Like, people don't go around thinking, I'm going to pirate. I mean, it's not like it's not a piracy issue because they don't want to spend the money. It's because they want it on all their devices.
But wait a minute. Aren't ebooks the most expensive compared to music and TV shows and movies? Maybe they're about the same as movies.
I would say they're about the same. I guess you're right. I guess All right. I'm missing another conversation.
Because, well, songs are 99 cents, but even albums are like $9.99. I mean, and that's usually what an ebook is.
Most of my ebooks are like $7.99. Most of the ones I buy, but I'm buying a lot of romance.
But I've had albums that are $7.99 too. So
I guess. Okay. I guess they're all expensive.
TV shows are much cheaper. Maybe, not for a season, maybe.
Maybe the users just want to support authors more.
Maybe. Maybe
willing to pay? I don't know.
I think that readers are people who are more thoughtful and less like, I'm going to run out and you know, mess around with torrents and play around with that kind of stuff. They're just like, I just want the book and I want to read it.
So
and the easiest way to do that is get it from the publisher.
If you read a book, you're a better person.
I think people who read are the best people in the whole world.
I agree. But we're biased.
And then finally, IO9 pointing out that Apocalypse Ocean author Tobias Buckell has a great blog post about the problem with book bloggers getting jaded and why reviews get worse the longer someone blogs about books. And I think this is affecting the people who talk about our choices every month, because we always have those people who criticize the choice. Like, I lemmed this book. I didn't like it. This book was awful. It's making the rounds on Tumblr.
I had, I mean, there's a post right now in the Wool threads about someone who read the first book in Wool, book one, and was like, lemmed it.
Yeah.
Gone. Did you
see my post on that thread?
I didn't see your post. Did you see my post on that thread?
No. My post was, I lemmed this thread.
My post was like, hey, this is actually, someone else said, like, that this is kind of the point of a book club.
Right.
Like you read things that are outside of your comfort zone, and then you discuss them and say why you liked it or why you did not like it or what worked for you, what didn't work for you. And so, yeah, we're not trying to force people to read, but at the same time, like, half the fun is giving something a chance that you may not normally give a chance to. And I think Wool really picks up. I mean, yeah, if a story doesn't grab you in the first chapter, like, you have every right to say, I have better things to read. I have other things that I would rather be spending my time on.
Tobias Buckell has a really good perspective on this. Here's what he says. He often quotes author C.C. Finley, who wrote or said, "A novel doesn't excite readers because you took all the bad stuff out of it. It excites them because of all the good stuff that's in it, regardless of the bad." And then Buckle goes on to say, at a workshop not too many years ago, a newer writer began to condemn a best-selling novel, pointing out all of its flaws and jagged edges. Buckle listened for a long time, nodded, and said, "All those things are true. But until you learn what the good parts were that excited the reader, you're always going to be bitterly upset about what is wrong with that bestseller. Learn to spot what worked in that book, and you'll be able to move forward. And you'll be a lot less upset all the time as well."
I think people, you know, it's very easy to be critical in a lot of ways and point out flaws. It's more thoughtful, I think, to think about what works for you in some ways.
Well, and I run into that a lot where I'm like, I'm reading this, somebody who's like, "I hated this book because of X, Y, and Z." And I'm like, you know, I don't disagree that X, Y, and Z were problems, but I disagree, or at least I didn't hate the book because of those, because there was also A, B, C, D, E, F, and G that I loved. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Buckell is saying, is if you focus on the negatives, you're always going to find something wrong with every book you read.
Right.
And therefore, you'll never like a book.
And books are there for the liking. They are there for the liking.
And that's not to say that if you don't like a book, like, that you're not trying hard enough. There are definitely books I haven't liked where I'm like, nope, the bad things are outweighing the good things for me in this one. Mm-hmm. And that's fair. But it does seem sometimes that there's people who are like, it must be perfect for me to like it or I will trash it.
Well, let's talk about some more books that you can like and not trash, hopefully. Forward. On May 14th, we have a new Sword and Laser audio podcast, which is today. Also today, we have The Human Division, the complete hardcover by John Scalzi. We have The Tyrant's Law, The Dagger and the Coin by Daniel Abraham. And Magician's End, book 3 of the Chaos War Saga by Raymond E. Feist. Still coming spelled up incorrectly on the calendar.
Fezzet. No, this isn't by Raymond Feist. This is by the lesser known Raymond E. Fezzet. May 21st, 2013, Blood and Bone, a novel of the Malazan Empire by Ian Cameron Esselmont. Spelled perfectly. The Guard of Stones, Echoes of Empire by Mark Barnes. The Resurrectionist, the last work of Dr. Spencer Black by E.B. Hudspeth.
Lost work.
And The Red Plague Affair, a Bannon and Clare novel by Lilith St. Crow.
On May 21st, we have The Fall of Arthur by J.R.R. Tolkien. And
wait,
also,
he got a new book?
He got a new book coming out. Who knew? And do you want me to read all the 28th ones or stop?
Sure. I don't know. What do you feel like?
Okay, I'm going to read them. Sword and Laser audio podcast wrap-up of Wool and kickoff of the next book in June.
Ooh, get hints on that soon.
The Shambling Guide to NYC by Mer Lafferty. And
Mer Lafferty, you know, of Dragon Con fame.
Oh, I was more focused on
Antigone.
Antigone Fire by Ellie Modestit Jr. Elf Home by Wen Spencer. The Eighth Court, Courts of the Fairy by Mike. I should have stopped reading by Mike Chevedon. And Ghost Spin by Chris Moriarty.
I'm actually really excited about Ghost Spin. That looks like a good cyber. If I don't want to say cyberpunk because that makes it sound like it's old fashioned, but it's in that lineage. There's too many good things to read. I want to read Daniel Abraham's The Tyrant's Law too. And then Abaddon's Gates coming out June 4th.
So many
I need more
things.
Me's.
All the things. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider, Tom?
Is The Name of the Wind, people.
Yay.
Have you not read The Name of the Wind? If you haven't read The Name of the Wind yet, don't forget, Patrick Rothfuss is a busy man, but he's going to write that third book one of these days, and then you're going to be sorry that you haven't read the first two. So go get a free version of Name of the Wind and listen to it right now, audiblepodcast.com/sword. Don't give me any excuses. Just go do it.
Don't give us no sass. I don't want any sass.
That's don't talk
you go
back.
Download that. Don't talk if, back.
I don't know. I know you're already an Audible subscriber, but I bet you know somebody who isn't. Now go give them audiblepodcast.com/sword and make them read Name of the Wind.
Woo!
And then use one of your credits to read it too.
Well, let's move on to TV, movies, and video games. And I am very excited about this news from the Wurt Zone. Stars. I am. Stars is moving forwards with the adaptation of Outlander. Now, I don't know if any of you follow along with Vaginal Fantasy, my other book club show, but Outlander is a fantastic book written by Diana Gabaldon. And it takes place in the Highlands of Scotland, and it is both fun and sexy and kind of a historical fiction type tale as well. And so I highly recommend you pick it up. But I am very excited. Ronald D. Moore is going to be involved. He's going to be the showrunner.
No kidding.
Yeah, wow, that's kind of a big deal.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to have Tony Graffia from Battlestar Galactica, Matt Roberts from Deep Space Nine, and Anne Kenny from L.A. Law. So there is like a ton of people.
Wait, hasn't Matt Roberts done anything since Deep Space Nine? That's so long ago. Well, I feel like
maybe it's just related. You know, maybe it's relevant to the discussion.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure most of these people have probably worked on other projects.
Yeah. Maybe they're just like, well, we know y'all are into sci-fi, so this is what you'll know him from.
Yeah, so I'm super
excited. It's Adam saying that. Okay, that makes sense. Adam's like, we all know him from Deep Space Nine.
It's not formally greenlit. There's still more stuff going on, but hopefully we'll learn more going forward. And that I really hope this happens because I don't have Stars though. How do I get Stars?
That's a good question, right? I went and plunked down for Stars when they got Torchwood.
Oh,
and as much as I love Torchwood, and there were parts of that series that I really did love, I was kind of like, oh, I'm not sure this was worth the money. I could have just like watched it later somehow on Netflix or something.
Yeah.
So hopefully this won't be like that. Hopefully this will. I mean, they got Ronald D. Moore, for goodness sake. This will be awesome.
I'm really hoping. I'm hoping it does well. I'm hoping it happens, first of all. I guess that's a good place to start. But Stars, I don't know. Maybe it'll come out on different places also. Does anything from Stars come out on like iTunes or Hulu or?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I don't want to say that without checking, but I think I remember Torchwood did come out on as you could buy it on iTunes, you know, the day after.
Okay, that's fair.
That would give you, let me see. Don't they do Camelot? Isn't that their horrible?
I don't know. I don't know anything about Stars. I'm happy I plunked down for HBO because I watch so much on HBO now, and I love having HBO Go, but...
Is Camelot Showtime or... Anyway, Camelot's available.
Completely unrelated to most other things we're talking about. Camelot is available.
No, but if it's on Stars, then that would mean that Stars sells their shows. I just can't remember. I think it might be on Showtime.
Well, I'm sure someone out in the audience can answer that question for us because you guys are smart.
Let's talk about the book.
Okay. So, yes, as you guys know, we are reading Wool by Hugh Howey. Of course, we're reading The Omnibus, the full collection of stories written after the short story Wool. And we're both done.
Yeah, I just tore through it. I couldn't stop. It was like candy. Like, I was literally finding things to do around the house because I was using Audible.
Oh.
Just so I could keep listening to it. It was...
I downloaded it on Audible with WhisperSync, and I found that I just read the book so fast on Kindle, I wasted one of my credits.
Oh, no.
I didn't listen to the audiobook at all because I read it in two nights while I was down in a shoot in L.A., and it just, like, I burned through it so fast.
I'll be honest. This is how much I like this book. I sit down now. I'm still finishing up the Dragon Riders of Pern trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I sit down at night and I'm enjoying that. And I'm like, oh, I remember when I would sit down and listen to Wool before I went to sleep. Those days are over.
That's awesome. You're already reminiscing.
I know.
Your fond memories reading Wool by Hugh
Howey. The good news is Shift. Yeah, I mean, I could just go buy Shift and start reading that. But Shift's coming out on Audible soon as well.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully by the time I'm done with The Great North Road, Dragon Riders of Pern, and Ian Tregellis's third novel, Shift will be out and I can read that.
So I did not know this, but Aaron has a whiteboard about Wool and I have not yet watched it. I just found it just now.
It's really good.
Is it good? You watched it?
Yeah, it's really good.
Aaron, you have to tell me when you do these so I can promote them. Don't just like bury them in the forums where I never see them.
Disc, Aaron.
God. All right, well, we'll put this on the blog post and I'll watch it because I can only assume it's amazing. So
I know. It is the best motivation for us to like get our
show back on
together
track.
And put a video show in so that we could get these whiteboards in the show again.
Yeah.
But honestly, I mean, as long as Aaron keeps making them and you keep watching them, that's the best.
Yeah, you can subscribe to Aaron, by the way, at youtube.com/Potterama, P-O-T-T-E-R-A-M-A. That's his YouTube channel. Subscribe and you will get all the new whiteboard videos and occasionally adorable videos of his children.
Yes, it's pretty awesome.
Which I have also watched, which so makes anyway, feel kind of creepy.
Without getting spoilery, before we move into the casting couch, I participated in the official book discussion thread because for the first time I was actually reading it along with everybody else instead of reading it a month early. Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of people really misunderstanding parts of the book that I thought I understood until I read what they were saying. And then I was like, the people pointing out inconsistencies.
And interesting. Things.
Like,
okay.
Like, I don't want to get too spoilery, but the cleaning is a thing that if you're at all into the book, you know what it means. And if you're not, then it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And people were talking about the aspects of that and the motivations for that and bringing up stuff. I'm like, well, I would point out things. And to me, this is what a book club is about, because they were making me go back and rethink, like, wait a minute, how did that work? And then I was able to point out like, oh, don't you remember earlier they said this? And then some people were like, oh, I'd forgotten that. You're right. And so I really felt like I was enjoying the book more because I was in a book club.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's good. Rob has been blowing things up in the forums. He is posting discussion threads for each book. And then people are going buck wild with those. There's a lot of great discussion happening around this
book. And Wool
right
lends
now.
Itself well to that because mm-hmm. you have those five parts that kind of are nice independent chunks. The first part definitely feels like a short story, and it was a short story. And so you feel like, okay, how is he going to continue this? But he has enough hooks that he can pull out and start moving along. I do have to say that the later parts definitely slowed down for me. And I kind of wanted them to move a little faster, mm-hmm. but I just absolutely love the world he created here and the mysteries. He does a great job of what I love in this kind of suspense novel, which is reveal a mystery and solve it entirely while raising a new mystery. Don't leave more questions on the same mystery, but like, yes, now you know about this, but aha, that leads to more questions, and not in the way where it's like more questions that never get answered. I thought he did a very adept job at that.
I agree. And I felt like it was dark without being hopeless.
Yes.
Which is something else I appreciate in a post-apocalyptic style book, because you don't want to just feel like nothing will ever get better. And the first book, you kind of start already having that sense of dread. And then in the second book, that dread starts to kind of increase in a lot of ways. And then you start getting some nuggets of hope. And the relationships between the characters, I think, helps in a big way, too. Because you're like, even though they're in this very strange, very difficult situation, there's still personal relationships happening and developing. That kind of shows you that life just kind of continues on. Like, even in this kind of world,
he does a good job of no one is evil. Like, people who seem evil, once you start to learn their motivations and thought processes.
No, man, Bernard is evil.
Well, is he though?
At least I'm sticking with evil on that one.
But you understand him a lot better. He may be evil, but if he is, it's for a different reason than you think of originally.
At the very least, he's definitely a douchebag.
Well, no doubt about that. I 100% agree with that. But you do learn, and now I'm getting spoilery because you named him by name, but there are lots of characters that you think, oh, well, they're motivated by this, obviously. And then later on, you learn that there was something else motivating them. And that shows good characterization skill.
I don't think it's spoilery to say Bernard is evil, because this moment you meet him, you're like, this guy is definitely evil.
It would be spoilery to say, but Bernard changes and becomes a flowery hippie who everyone loves, which is not true, but, you know, yeah.
So hopefully you guys will stick with it if you're having some trouble getting into it. But I was grabbed by the first book immediately. So I don't know what you're talking about, Travis. Travis, you'd be crazy.
Travis, you'd be tripping. And, you know, Travis has the right to be tripping, though.
He has the right to be tripping. Absolutely.
Let's give him that. Dara started the inevitable casting thread. Woo-hoo! And I have to say, really liked Emerson's suggestion of Sam Elliott for Deputy Marnes.
Totes.
Thought that was a good one. I actually was intrigued by Gregory casting Rashida Jones from Parks and Rec as Juliet.
Yeah.
I could kind of see it, actually.
Other people, I saw other castings where they placed Juliet as being an Asian woman. And I don't remember there being any description of her now that I think about it.
I think she's a brunette. I think that's the only description I remember.
See, in my mind, I had her as a blonde for some reason.
Really?
Which is weird because I'm not a blonde. I don't like idolize blondes or have
sure
blondes.
Sure you do. You love blondes.
I love blondes.
You blondes are the best co-host you've ever had.
You're a dirty blonde.
dirty blonde. I pictured Michelle Rodriguez as Juliet. The only character
fair, you picture Michelle Rodriguez for everything.
That's not true. I do not.
You totally do.
When have I ever mentioned that?
I don't
know.
I have the sense that you do that.
No, I don't.
I just have the sense that you do that. No, who's that woman you like on that other show on Fringe?
Who, Astrid?
Yeah, don't you like the one who's your desktop background?
Well, that's the name of my laptop.
Why is it the name of your laptop?
Because Jessica Nicole is awesome.
Okay.
But that's not Michelle Rodriguez. No, the only character, I mean, I pictured all the characters, but the only character that I immediately was like, that's who that looks like, was Juliet. And I pictured her as Michelle Rodriguez.
I don't picture people as actors ever. They're always some kind of weird amalgamation of other people.
Bernard's kind of bald and
it wasn't bald to me.
A little bit of fuzzy beard.
See, I like bald guys, so I wouldn't have cast him as bald.
That's true. I think he wasn't totally bald though. Like he had fringes, you know, when people like leave stuff up there and you're like, you know, you really should take care of that.
You can leave stuff on the side, just don't comb it over.
This is unkempt. Like you just you don't. Like the people who deny that they're bald, comb over, you know.
Yeah, that's not a good look. Stewart had a lot of casting things. His picks were for Holston, Viggo Mortensen. A little too handsome.
Possibly.
For Marnes, John Voight. A little too old. I'm going to put that as a little too old.
Oh, no, I don't think so. No? I thought Marnes was kind of old anyway.
How about Michael Douglas? Too handsome?
What John? Well, okay. John Voight is older than Michael Douglas. Yeah, too handsome.
Is it Johns or Jans?
Johns.
Helen Mirren, totally. I get that.
Yeah, I get that. Good call.
Juliet, Diane Kruger, very pretty.
No.
A little too, not rugged enough.
No.
Not tomboyish enough.
Not going with that one. Ooh, good Bernard, though.
Okay, I wouldn't have seen that, but I can make that work.
No, me either, but
I can make that work.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Now that you say that, mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Lucas, James McAvoy, totally. I can see that. Okay.
Yeah,
I can
sure.
see that. Walker, Ian McKellen.
I was picturing Walker as being a lot bigger than Ian McKellen.
No, I was picturing him as being frailer than Ian McKellen.
He has Ron Perlman as Knox. I was picturing Walker as more of a Ron Perlman.
No,
type.
Knox is huge. Walker was like, are you confusing your characters?
Walker's the radio guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought he was kind of a stocky guy.
No, but he's kind of like
that. Just, you know, bigger than Helen's rail thin.
Introverted.
Right. Because introverted people are always rail thin. What?
Yes. Because he wouldn't eat. He wouldn't eat. He hated eating.
He stopped eating at one point. Spoiler alert.
Anyway, Solo, Leonardo DiCaprio. What are you talking about? That's crazy.
You know, this could be his Woody Harrelson moment if he took that role.
Yes. Woody Harrelson. How about Woody Harrelson?
Actually, like Woody Harrelson would be pretty good.
I like that even better. Shirley Amy Acker. I don't remember what she looks like.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever described her.
I don't remember. I don't know what Amy Acker looks like.
Oh, well, do a search.
All right.
Command T, Amy stuff. Acker.
Sassafrasin.
Yeah, no. Well, maybe, actually. Now that I'm looking at her. I hadn't thought about that.
Nope.
I was just thinking
of
her.
She looks like Callie Lewis.
Callie Lewis could play Shirley.
No, I feel Shirley, to me, was more like buxom mom-like.
Oh, really? See, no, I thought her as like, you know, thin, perky.
Really?
Happy. Yeah.
Weird. Okay. Plus, well, I listen to the audio. Interesting.
I listen to the audiobook, so that colors your perception. And in the audiobook, she's read as.
Why are all of her pictures in like underwear? Is this all she does?
Well,
all of her pictures are like naked. I'm not judging. I'm just saying. I just want to. I'm seeing her nipple right now. I'm looking at her nipple right
Stop
now.
Looking.
I'm not trying to look. It is in my face.
I'm looking at the thread on Goodreads. Personally.
Well, I just saw her nipple, so now I can't see that. Can't it was a fine nipple. It was perfectly fine.
I think we have sufficiently checked in on Wool, and we should probably give people a hint about what the June book is going to be in case they need to like check it out of the library or put their order in at the bookstore or whatever.
All right. Well, I was thinking maybe Among Others by Joe Walton.
I like that. I've been wanting to read that.
Have you been wanting to read it?
I have. Yeah, that's actually been on my to-read list. Okay. Actually, I don't know if I put it on my Goodreads to-read list, but in my head it has been.
So it was the winner of the 2011 Nebula Award for Best Novel and the 2012 Hugo Award for Best Novel.
Yeah.
The description on Amazon. Startling, unusual, and yet irresistibly readable, Among Others, is at once the compelling story of a young woman struggling to escape a troubled childhood, a brilliant diary of first encounters with the great novels of modern fantasy and sci-fi, and a spellbinding tale of escape from ancient enchantment. So raised by the mad half-mother half-mad mother. She wasn't her half-mother.
She was half-mother, half-bull.
Raised by the mother. No, I did it again. Raised by the half-mad mother who dabbled in magic, Morwenna Phelps found refuge in two worlds. As a child growing up in Wales, she played among the spirits who made their homes in industrial ruins. But her mind found freedom and promise in the science fiction novels that were her closest companions. Then her mother tried to bend the spirits to dark ends, and Mori was forced to confront her in a magical... Okay, well, I don't want to...
Yeah. That's good. So, coming in June, Among Others, by Joe Walton. For July, for the laser pick, I will do a vote.
Oh, you're going to vote it up, huh?
Right, because there have been a lot of discussion in Goodreads about renegade reads and, well, I don't want to read this. Why do they get to pick? So it's about time. We haven't done a vote in a while, so I'm going to do a vote just so you know. Start throwing out the things that you'd like us to vote for. I'm going to take the top two unread things from the Goodreads list of sci-fi stuff. And if you don't know what that is, just ask around on Goodreads. People give you the link. And then I'll add three others as suggested in a thread.
Excellent.
So that's coming in July. Your voice will determine the pick.
Very cool. So let's move on quickly to Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Just a few little tidbits here. We had a thread started about formatting your posts. It comes from Sandy. She writes, please, please, please use the title rather than the cover when using the add book or author function. There's a little button at the bottom of the dialog box. I sometimes use the mobile app to read Goodreads threads, and covers don't show in the posts. Even on my computer, it's really hard to tell what book is being mentioned from the cover. At least on the computer, I can hover and see the title. Thank you. Lots of agreement there. So.
Yeah. That's something I hadn't thought about, that on mobile, you don't see the cover. That's something to tell Goodreads about, frankly.
Yeah, mobile.
It's like, hey, give us some alt text there.
Yeah, mobile could use some work. Maybe I will tell let Otis know about that.
If only we knew somebody who had been an advisor.
I'm now a spiritual advisor. I'm no longer a technical advisor since the acquisition, but I'm still a spiritual advisor.
So I always pick the cover because I think it looks better, but I will change, Sandy. I will change my ways. I will mend my ways for you.
Aww. Well, you didn't know any better.
I was young and I needed the gifs.
Yeah.
Ruth started a section about renegade reads, and I thought this was hilarious. Ruth started it saying renegade read section because a bunch of people are reading Ian Banks this month. I'd like one a lot. And then other people are like, well, renegade reads, we usually do it in the what else are you reading section. Like, why would you want a renegade read section? And they're like, yeah, but it's hard to find it in there. It'd be great if there was a renegade read section. So if you're doing a renegade read, you know where to go. I just find it funny that the renegades are like, we need more order. We need more organization to these renegades.
Hmm.
So I don't know if we want to encourage, I don't know, Empress do we encourage renegade reads, or do we just say, no, you know, what else are you reading is fine. That's where you go. You want to be all renegade? It's on you.
If it's going to be a new discussion section for renegade themes, I would want it to be one thread per renegade read.
Well, yeah. And also, if you have a whole section, then it almost implies like you should always be doing a renegade read. And we don't want that.
I'd like a little cohesiveness for the book club. Yeah. I don't want it to just become, though we are like pretty much the largest book club.
Yeah. And that's why we have so many people want to do renegade reads. So we don't want to stomp on that. I get that.
I don't know what to do. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll do I don't want to do a vote either.
We'll take it under advisement.
I'll think about it. I'll have another glass of wine and I'll think about it.
We'll discuss it in the small council.
Mm-hmm. In the council chambers.
Yeah.
In the Tower of the Hand.
Yeah.
There is actually, when was this posted? April 2nd. I don't know when that happened, but there's been some talks of meetups in person. And Vaginal Fantasy does this. I see no reason why we shouldn't either. Some people, it seems, are going to the Scalzi meeting tonight, the Scalzi signing tonight. Tom is not one of them, just so you know.
Because I suck.
Because he sucks. But if you guys want to start planning more get-togethers in person, we've done that once before when we went to the Tad Williams signing. We had a little dinner and drinks beforehand. Remember that?
Yeah, that was fun.
That was totally fun. Tom and I are going to be showing up a lot of places in the near future where we could do this kind of stuff. But you don't need us.
We'll be at BayCon in San Jose. Well, it's in Santa Clara, but pretty much San Jose. Mm-hmm. We're going to be at Nerdtacular in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. We're going to be at DragonCon in August, end of August in Atlanta.
I'm going to be at Comic-Con too.
I may be at Comic-Con. I'm not sure.
I'm not officially at Comic-Con, but I'm doing work for a different project there. So I'll be there. So maybe we should just do like a drink night.
If I end up going to Comic-Con, I may not be able to go. If I end up going, we should definitely do that.
Okay. Or maybe I'll just do something. I don't need you.
Yeah.
I don't need you there.
I'm going to be obsolete soon. You and Josh are going to be doing these interviews without me.
Yay. Yes. Josh Lawrence is helping me with the Nebula Awards interviews, which I'm very excited about. Did we talk about that yet? I don't remember.
No, but here, let me move it up in the lineup to there. And it's the next thing. Now talk about it.
Perfect. All right. So this coming week on Friday, Josh Lawrence, one of our fantastic forum mods and author of our theme song, and I will be going to the Nebula Awards, and we'll be interviewing Kim Stanley Robinson of 2312 fame, of course, and many other books. Gene Wolfe, of course, we read Shadow of the Torturer.
Who, by the way, is Josh's personal hero, I have a feeling.
Yeah,
so
Josh is freaking out. I'm not saying that Josh is freaking out, but Josh is freaking
out. I hope he doesn't pass out. Yeah.
And Joe Haldeman from Forever War, which we read in the book long ago. Forever Wars ago. So if you want to ask any questions of any of those three authors, we have threads up in the author questions discussion area on the forum. So head over there and post your questions. And I look forward to meeting all these great authors. It's actually kind of intimidating.
And the plan is we will post those as audio podcasts in the off weeks when we're not doing one of these kinds of episodes. So you'll get some extra episodes there for a while.
Yeah, a little bonus episodage. So that should be fun.
Tomorrow ends the submissions for the Sword and Laser anthology, and no, you cannot have an extension.
Why would you even ask that?
Ever?
Why would you ask that?
We gave you from March through May 15th. That's 2.5 months. If you haven't finished, that's okay. Don't feel bad. Perfect it for next time around. But you've had plenty of time for this time around. So that is it. Tomorrow ends the submission at midnight Pacific time. Mm-hmm. We will no longer consider anything we get. You can email the address. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to look at it, though. I got too much to read already.
We've got plenty. And
no mercy.
And we want to give huge thanks to the people who have submitted.
Oh, my gosh, you guys.
Who read the guidelines, who submitted amazing stuff. It's going to be incredibly difficult to pick. We are going to leave good things out, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So if you don't get selected for the anthology, please don't take it amiss. We're pretty overwhelmed with what we got here.
Yeah, I'm totally blown away. Like, I knew we were going to get a lot of submissions, but I had no idea the sheer volume of content we would be getting. And they're not short. I mean, you guys are maxing out the word limits. You're really going for it. I mean, I saw a Twitter post the other night from someone who said their story was 10,000 words and they spent a couple days editing it and got it down to the 7,500 max.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of editing. That's a lot of words. So
we
you guys
need time.
Worked your butts off.
We need time to read everything to consider it properly. So please be patient. As we mentioned in the guidelines, back when we posted them in March, mm-hmm. we expect to make our final selections by August 15th, yes. 2013.
Please be patient with us. I mean, you may not hear from us right away, even if you've been selected. I mean, we have to go through, basically we're slush reading right now. We're going through everything. We're putting them in piles. We're discussing the things that have been chosen in the potential keeper piles. There's a whole process.
Yeah. So, but please know if you sent something to that email address, we got it. Mm-hmm. I know some of you were still like, can you just make sure that you got, we got it.
If we emailed back, maybe I should have done an autoresponder.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that next time. Just to reassure people. And also we thank you. We know, cause we know that your heart and soul went into these things. Yeah. And so it's, I wish we could just publish them all, but that would be gargantuan.
That would be a very, very large book.
let's make it up to people by giving away some books.
Okay. Yeah. So as we mentioned on our Google Hangout video and also on the podcast last week, we are giving away of signed copies, hardcover, signed and numbered copies of the Age Atomic by Adam Christopher.
And one copy of Empire State, one copy of Age Atomic. Both signed and numbered, as Veronica said. The Empire State is a variant cover from the one you would have seen in stores. And so we thank everybody who responded to the thread.
There were many of you.
What would you do with your private robot army? And so to keep this random, pick a number between 1 and 124, Veronica Belmont.
33.
Actually, between... Okay, good. I was going to say between 2 and 124 because Adam, Chris, I mean, I wrote the first post. 24, you say.
No, I didn't say that. I said 33.
Oh, 33, you say.
was that your selection?
No, 124 was what was stuck in my mind. Okay. Well, this is interesting. I don't think that counts. Pick another number because it's a response to somebody else's post.
Oh, okay. Damn it.
And you don't get to answer twice.
Okay, 66.
66. Here we go. 66. Who's calling me? I don't want to talk to people right now. 66. It's Las Vegas. I don't know anyone in Las Vegas. It's spam. Okay, here we go. Misty,
who wrote,
part of my robot army would be responsible for cleaning my house and cooking my meals. Another part would be responsible for fixing things around the house, including my car. Then there would be a security detail from keeping unwanted visitors away.
Oh, good answer. I like it.
Yeah, totally, so congratulations, Misty. We will message you over Goodreads mm-hmm. and get your details, and they will send you the appropriate book. You've won Empire State, so let's give away Age Atomic next.
Do I have to pick another number?
You want to? Yeah, let's do it that way. Pick another number between 2 and 124.
And not 33 and not 66. Okay. What was the high end?
124.
Okay, let's do 99,
my favorite secret agent from Get Smart.
Yes.
Let's see. Do I go all the way to 99?
Barbara Egan.
Panama Jack.
Panama Jack. What was his answer?
Do a dramatic recreation of A Song of Ice and Fire with our unsullied robotic army. Is our army all a single model, or will they come custom made? Ask George if we'll need more than just a trio of dragon robots. Are Pern Dragon Cylons? Bran knows, I'm sure.
I love it.
So nice post.
In case you can't tell, I like I like the number 3, and I like multiples of 3.
Yeah.
So if you ever want to worm your way into my heart, 3 is a good number. I don't know why.
All right.
Because my crazy brain, TM.
Well, that ends our 128th episode, which 12 is a multiple of 3.
True. All right. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is feedback at Sword and Laser. Our website is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussion happens over on goodreads.com. And if you want to call and leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. That is 415-7-SWORD-6. 7-SWORD-6. I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.